So we've had over 2 months now of our winter retreat and exploring the Satipatthana, oftentimes translated as the foundations of mindfulness. And that's, that's a good enough translation, but it could be misconstrued, or particularly if you think in terms of, the foundations, it's almost like an objective thing, it's out there. And to a certain degree, it is certainly form, feelings, mind objects. I think it's helped. There's other alternative translations, like the or establishings of mindfulness, or the attendings with mindfulness, or abidings with mindfulness, and that helps to fill it out a little bit in terms of how we conceive of what we're doing. Because there's a bit more of a attention to the mind itself in that way, and that's important, because it's kind of one of the problems of our mind and our being is this habit that we have of objectifying everything, and to be able to really turn attention back to the mind itself is essential in finding a way to find some balance or some peace. There's a nice quote I came across from Ajahn Mun, where he said, of all the things that have value and preciousness in the world, that which has the most value is the most valuable and precious is the mind. And if we understand the mind, we understand Dhamma. So this turning attention back onto the mind, using mindfulness to return the kind of reflective or investigative mind back on itself, is an important basis of mindfulness, being aware, attentive, alert to the nature of mind and what the mind is doing, what its habits are. It is an ongoing exercise in directing attention. So, but it is important that there is this sense of balance of recognizing that sense of, how do we lift up things as an object, but then how do we, what are the kind of the biases and habits and conditioning that of the mind itself? And so that there's this layers and layers of the mind that we need to be willing to investigate and to direct our attention to in terms of relinquishment, and just recognizing what is the purpose of the practice of training in these Satipatthana, these bases of mindfulness. And the Buddha, of course, is very, in his very first sentence of introducing the Satipatthana Sutta, and he said, this is the direct path for the purification of beings, for the overcoming of sorrow and lamentation. In other words, for the ending of all dukkha. So that too comes up so many times through the whole Buddhist canon. The Buddha saying, I teach only two things, the dukkha and ending of dukkha. So to be, how do we free the mind? How do we establish ourselves in this liberated heart? So it's just learning how to do that. One of the tools that is really essential is a basic You know, so much of this is almost like basic Buddhism 101, but it's you know, so often we keep going on to the next thing. And so again, this habit of objectifying, going out all the time and overlooking or maybe not fully appreciating how powerful the simple tools that the Buddha pointed to 2,500 years ago really are. And so this is just that the three universal characteristics of all things, anicca, dukkha, anatta, are really, really important. So just that sense of paying attention, reviewing, reminding, contemplating, and considering just the nature of things. And these are the, again, universal characteristics of whether it's external, whether it's internal, whether it's far or near, whether it's of the body, of the mind, of the world or the self, just everything is whether it's it's recognizing that all conditioned things are impermanent, anicca, and impermanent, inconstant, changing. But just being able to recollect and recognize, you know, something that is going to change. Because we're, on a certain level, we're constantly hoping that something will, if we could just get the world to stop somehow, we could get off. But it, you know, it doesn't. It's this process of change. And that's its nature. It's this, you trying to make it be something it isn't is the problem, and it's like these three characteristics are, you know, reflecting on impermanence, dukkha, unsatisfactoriness, suffering, the unwanted aspect of things. They have this inability to truly satisfy. And again, whether it's mental, physical, external, internal, you know, gross or subtle, they're just of the nature to be unable to truly satisfy and truly make one happy and peaceful. It's not that there isn't things that are pleasurable and delightful, interesting, but it's like Ajahn Chah, one of the idioms that he used, you know, looking at the nature of existence, the nature of the world, the nature of the self, in Thai, it's just sort of canon, just this much. And I can remember him, it's just sort of, you know, this big smile on his face, and somebody coming to it with all this angst about difficulties or the problems or the difficulties of practice, and he said, "It's kenang. It's just a little thing. It's not a big thing at all." So that to be able to really see that, or to be able to appreciate the things are you know, it's not a big deal. The important thing is to be able to look at things in a way that you see their true nature, so that one is willing to relinquish or to let go. And it's kind of like a key this reflection on anicca, dukkha, anatta is kind of like the key that unlocks the delusion of our minds. And it's just, if you don't have the right key, it doesn't open. It's not opening the heart up so that one can see with clarity and spaciousness. But yeah, if you don't have the right key, you can bash away at the door. So he's using the reflective mind to review and investigate, and seeing the nature of things. You know, seeing that impermanent, uncertain, changing nature of things, so that the mind is cooling and settling, rather than having that passion of delusion or the passion of irritation or fear or worry or something. It's just, you know, that's the way it is. That's the way it always has been. That's the way it will be. It's not going to be different. And same with that aspect of dukkha, trying to make things be pleasing to one, to always be there and be a source of satisfaction and contentment. And it's just not possible. And particularly reflecting on the aspect of not self, anatta, is just so important. Because, you know, it's like Lopa Samedo. He's got a whole book with the title, Don't Take Your Life Personally. And this is so important. This is that brilliant turn of phrase. And that, because we take it all so personally. And you realize, no, this is not self. This is all nature playing itself out in different ways. And it's just like this. It's not. And again, it's just canon. It's just this much. But the not self is not a negation of our experience or our personality or our moods or our feelings. But it's recognizing that you know, this is not what our kind of our true essence is, the kind of the heart of our being. As this, you sort of reflect over and over again, just that all the moods, all the thoughts, all the opinions, all the views, well, I mean, they rise, they cease, they come, they go. Why do we keep thinking, this is what I am, this is me, this is mine? I mean, the external world or material things are, you know, reasonably easy to see, but it's those moods of the mind and the views of the mind and being able to see that more and more clearly. And then as one does that, it opens up incredible space for the heart to be really peaceful. And of course, what's left is a clear seeing, clear knowing, a clarity of being that is peaceful. It's unshakable. And these are one of the epithets of the Buddha, is one who is unshakable. So that's and it's something that always, you know, in terms of when I reflect back on Ajahn Chah, my own teacher, it's something that would come to mind, is this quality of unshakability, and not really moved. And it wasn't that he didn't have any affect he was very vibrant, very alive, very present for people, but he wasn't going to buy into the reactions that people had to themselves or the world or the circumstances of the world. It was only that much. So that this seeing anicca, dukkha, anatta, and really lifting it up in the mind, and because sometimes we just want the mind to be peaceful, but really it's just like putting a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. I mean, it's you need to clean it up. You need to stitch it. You need to do something. You can't just put a patch of tranquility over top of it, and it's going to go away. And you've got to reflect and investigate. This is its very nature. It's that's understanding the nature of the mind. It's this thing. Ajahn Mun saying, if we understand the mind, we understand Dhamma. But to understand the mind, we have to understand its very nature. So that contemplation of everything in that framework of anicca, dukkha, anatta, it's really important, because then it turns the mind to relinquishment, release, letting go, and that's what is necessary. Seeing clearly, so that the mind releases its delusion, it releases its desires, it releases its clinging, it releases its reactivity, releases its habits and conditioning. Then it's just this, that willingness to release and let go. Things would be as they are. Sometimes, and so that I mean, there's different frameworks of, you know, I would say that, or how that's applied. Like one of the ways of applying that is just in terms of the structure of how the Buddha had us contemplate, is reflecting on the what the Buddha called the asada, the gratification, the pleasant aspect of things, the benefit, pleasing element. Because it's not that that there isn't those aspects of the world. You can't just sort of go around negatively trying to view things through a lens of kind of a mortification. It's sort of, yeah, this is really, there are some very beautiful elements to things, but even that, it's, yeah, impermanent, unsatisfactory, not so. Seeing the asada, seeing the adinava, seeing the drawback, seeing the disadvantage, seeing the a painful aspect of things, and so seeing it in that way, but then also seeing the way out, seeing the release, seeing the escape, and the way out from the world. And that's always from the Buddha's perspective, from his teaching, it's always in terms of relinquishment and release and letting go. And that letting go of attachment, letting go of desire, letting go of those tendencies to delusion and grasping. So this, the mind that contemplates, say, anicca dukkha anatta, that contemplates, so what is the benefit? Because that's certainly, you know, in our practice, what's the benefit of keeping precepts? Because it's a tremendous benefit. It really settles the mind. Will it fully liberate us? Not particularly, but it's, you've got to get that foundation going. Even, what's the benefit of being mindful? It was a tremendous benefit, but it's just sort of seeing the need to take it to the step where there is an insight into the true nature of things, and there is a release into kind of a heart that is really free, and we have to be willing to be able to take that step. So often we hold ourselves back with our own perception of limitations or our perception of our personality of how could I be one who is able to be peaceful and free and liberated. And so we conceive of that's a drawback. Seeing the drawback, seeing the way out, seeing the escape, seeing the release. This is actually one of the ways that the Buddha described his own awakening. There's a variety of ways that the Buddha spoke of his own awakening, liberation. And so, you know, it wasn't until I saw these Four Noble Truths and their 12 aspects that I was able to be completely liberated or free. It wasn't until I saw the dependent origination and see in its all its aspects that I was able to be, but wasn't until I saw the worlds in all their manifestation that I was able to be free of the world. It wasn't until, but the, another one is I wasn't until I saw the benefit and the allure, the gratification as gratification, saw the drawback as a drawback, and saw the way out as the way out, see the escape truly. And so that being able to reflect and investigate, so that rather than the reaction to things or the view and opinion that we have about things, whether it's external, internal, about the world, about the mind, about the self, starting to see it as in, and as seeing from a perspective of not self. These are just phenomena that come into being and pass away. And when they're seen clearly, they have the power to liberate us, really. But it's when it's not seen clearly, then we can easily be entangled. So that using the contemplation of anicca, dukkha, anatta, and really reflecting, you know, applying it to, okay, this body, is there, and just really reviewing, is there anything permanent about this body? Is there anything permanent about the mind, the feeling, pleasant feeling, and of course, pleasant feeling, unpleasant feeling, neutral feeling. And not just as an intellectual exercise, but as an internalizing, and how do we experience that? As opposed to objectifying it as an intellectual object, how do we experience it? And when we do experience it, then that has a power to transform the perceptions and memories and associations, the way that the sanya, these five aggregates of being, form, feeling, perception, mental formations, all of the thoughts, emotion, all of the wholesome moods of the mind that arise, all of the unwholesome, these are impermanent, they're unsatisfactory. They can't truly satisfy. It's not that you can't use them, and you have to learn how to use them. You can't just negate the mind. And you can't just try to shut it up and get it to go away. And same with consciousness itself, just the ability to know and recognize the sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, mental objects themselves, and being able to reflect from that perspective of anicca, dukkha, anatta. And then if, when we contemplate from that perspective, and different aspects of experience will, you know, either, you know, make sense to us or attract us or be affect us in a powerful way, because it's not really three truths about the characteristics. It's sort of their three aspects of really one truth. So that it depends, you know, whatever angle you come at. Once you see, say, the impermanent aspects of things, oh, then it makes, that's why it's dukkha and anatta. Or it might feel more interesting to contemplate coming at it from the angle of anatta or dukkha. But it has the ability to transform the mind, and so that the mind can settle. This is where the Buddha points to these elements of the mind settling as we take in that characteristic of impermanence, and there's the possibility of the settling of the mind, samadhi, with the theme of impermanence as its basis, as well as a release. And so the Buddha calls that the animitta, a signless concentration, a signless release. And it's because when the more one contemplates and internally recognizes that arising and ceasing, then one's not grasping on to the signs and the appearance of things. And so then the mind can settle into that awareness or that recognition, and the mind can collect and relinquish with that as the theme. And same with the contemplation of dukkha, it can be the catalyst for the settling or samadhi that is based on desirelessness. This is called apanihita samadhi. Apanihita vimukti, the release of liberation through desirelessness. And we see also this is unsatisfactory. This is dukkha. This is really unable to fulfill on a constant basis. And so that there is a release into that settling with a cooling of heart. The theme is desirelessness. The mind is not directed out toward any object looking for gratification. It's sort of able to be steady in terms of its that the feeling of they don't have to move from that impulse of craving, of wanting, of desiring. And there's that, and that's where the source of contentment and steadiness is. And they say the liberation of samadhi, of contemplation of anatta, is that this is where the Buddha points to sunyata, emptiness. The emptiness of self, the emptiness of the I-making, the mind-making, those underlying tendencies to conceit or conceiving. And that is the liberating quality of the heart. But it's also a settling of the mind where one doesn't have to be conceiving. One is not buying into that conceiving of that me and my position. And it's, again, tremendously liberating and soothing, cooling, settling. That to be experimenting with, how do I settle the mind? Because so oftentimes we put a tremendous amount of energy trying to force the mind onto an object, trying to make the mind be mindful, trying to make the mind be steady, and it's sort of how do we hold this whole body-mind complex? How do we hold this whole idea of the world in a way that is inclining to relinquishment, inclining to release? And so that, anicca dukkha anatta is really the catalyst or the key that we want to be relying on. So those are some thoughts for reflection this evening. I'll offer that.